Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, November 4th, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Cranky.
Really? I had not picked up on that at all. John Bartolaro, how are you?
I am very good, actually. Endless autumn here in Denver.
Oh, thank God. I'm so glad one of you's in a good mood. I mean, I am so glad that both of you are here.
I think we could even say that John is ebullient.
I think so. Yeah. He no definitely is.
No snow yet.
Gesundheit.
Yeah.
hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Smart Backup 4. And they have a deal for you guys. I'll talk about that just a little bit. But before we get to that, we've been talking about all the new stuff Apple's been doing. And we had a discussion that started up earlier today that I thought maybe we ought to explore a little bit more. And this is about the potential success of the Touch Bar on the new MacBook Pro. And what brought this on was the realization that, much like 3D touch on the iPhone, or is it Force Touch? I can never remember, because it's 3D touch on one device on the iPhone, and then Force Touch on the trackpad. Is that right?
Trackpad is Force Touch. 3D touch is iPhone. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. See, on a side note, totally going down a rat hole here. What's up with that? That is so confusing. Why not just call when you push hard on the thing, the same thing on all the devices?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, we are elbow deep, neck deep, nose deep. We're underwater in all this stuff every day, and it's hard to keep track of which is which.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, so what I wanted to talk about was the fact that the Touch Bar could potentially be an afterthought for developers, because they have to make sure everything they do in an app can be done without a Touch Bar. Otherwise, they're alienating part of their user base.
Well, yeah, no, it's not necessarily alienating. It actually would be making their products unusable for some of the potential customer base if anything required Touch Bar.
Yes, that's true. So maybe I was a little harsh when I said alienate.
Or not harsh enough.
I suppose it depends on excuse me, how cranky you are today.
Yeah, mostly pedantic. But
look at the market penetration too. You know, we only have these new MacBook Pros just now in the delivery phase. Most people are using 99.999% of Mac users do not have a Touch Bar. Over the next year, maybe that'll climb to 0.5%. So that'll influence developers' decisions for a few years.
Sure.
So, I mean, the Apple has been doing this staged rollout for years, for a very long time, where a new technology, a new feature will be rolled out first on the iPhone, you know, be it software, be it hardware, and then eventually may come to the Mac. Touch ID is a great example of this. It started off on a particular iPhone, eventually came to part of the iPad line. Then it expanded a little bit. So it has been rumored to be coming to, I guess it is coming to the MacBook Pro, of course. And it could even come to the iMac at some point. And it's taken years. But with something like 3D Touch and Force Touch, you've got a user interface element that really, I mean, like, I think most developers could be excused for not bothering with it, because it was, first it was a subset of Mac desktops or Mac devices, and then is now on a subset of iPhones, but still isn't available on iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would have to be really excited as a developer to bother to support that. And then to what you were saying earlier, I've got to make sure that it's something that where my app works without it just as well as it does with it. And that, I mean,
that's an intriguing point. It's a very intriguing point, because you end up having to decide how best to implement your UI on different machines that may or may not have the touch bar. That's tough, I think.
Well, the way I see it is you develop all your apps as if there is no touch bar. And then, if you still have time and budget, then you add in touch bar features.
Right. We'll plant a stake in the ground on that one. Well, I agree with you, Jeff. I mean, that's going to hurt the evolution of the touch bar. It's not unreasonable from what we've been saying to suggest that the touch bar could be just a fancy gadget that only supports the native Mac apps.
Yeah, my guess is for a while, the go-to place to actually use Touch Bar will be Apple's own apps. Mm-hmm. And then every place else that it shows up, it'll be like a little surprise.
Well, yeah. There will be a few flagship third-party apps for sure. I mean, we saw some of them on stage already.
Right. And yeah, and like Adobe Creative Suite, well, Photoshop specifically is what they mentioned. That's going to be after the first of the year. Is that right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. So really, for the people that are going to get the Touch Bar MacBook Pro in hand over the next few weeks, they're going to get a computer that has Touch Bar support pretty much just for Apple's apps.
Well, but there's some system-level stuff too, though, Jeff. Right? There will be some system-level stuff that will be available to every app simply because it's part of the system.
Yes, that's true.
One of our readers brought up a really interesting point to me, and that is the focus of your eyes. You know, with a touch-sensitive screen, where you're looking is where the action is. And he pointed out that when you're we can touch type. We know where the keys are. That's built into us. Mm-hmm. But when you're staring at the touch bar and manipulating it and looking down at the touch bar and looking for feedback there and looking up at the screen to see what's happening and then looking down at the touch bar to do more things and looking up at the screen to see what happened, that's almost as bad as reaching out to touch something. At least when you reach out to touch something, what you're touching is what's happening. So there's a trade-off there, and I'm not convinced that one is totally better than the other.
John is stoned.
Cranky Brian is fun.
Well, John, I'm going to push back on that. I suspect that for those who have Touch Bar and who get used to it, it will become just as, you know, sort of that automatic process as using a mouse or using a trackpad or even using our keyboard, where you get used to what you're doing and it doesn't become jarring like you just described.
I hope so.
I want a keyboard for my iMac that'll do with a touch bar.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about that lately. Apple probably didn't announce iMacs on October 27th because of the technical issues associated with having a separate keyboard. During our live coverage, Paul Kafafis, was it, or Mark Armour, mentioned that you've got to worry about the security of a Touch ID on an external keyboard. And then not everybody may favor Apple's keyboard. And then the idea was proposed to me that maybe the Touch ID should be on the face of the Mac itself, so that if you swap out keyboards, you can still log on with Touch ID. And then the question comes up, you know, if Apple were to build their own keyboard, Would everybody like the keyboard? Would they use the butterfly keys, which a lot of people don't like? And so this whole question of an external keyboard on an iMac, getting the technology down, making sure the encryption is secure, making sure that the logon can't be, you know, intercepted and fingerprint information collected, and making the keyboard pleasing and affordable, and the fact that keyboards tend to come and go on iMacs is a technical issue that probably Apple's been wrestling with for quite a while.
True. It's certainly not a simple task. And we're also looking at the idea of having a $200 keyboard, probably.
Yeah, I've had $200 keyboards before, and if it was the form factor that Apple offers, I would be really disappointed I spent $200. I mean, they're perfectly good keyboards, just not the right one for me.
I would love to have the butterfly keyboard to replace my Apple aluminum keyboard, because I have a MacBook and I love that keyboard, but not everybody does, and I recognize that. So, you know, it's one thing to put it on the MacBook and say, you know, the MacBook Pro, and say, well, it was on the MacBook, and people like it on the MacBook, you're going to like it on the MacBook Pro too. But where people have the freedom to swap keyboards, they may not be so enthusiastic about being stuck with a butterfly keyboard and the price associated with Touch ID electronics and encryption.
John, why are you wanting to separate Touch ID from Touch Bar? Like, you posited that as some sort of natural splitting, and I'm not really sure why.
Well, if you buy your own keyboard, I know Jeff likes the Mattias Pro, right? Mm-hmm. You substitute your own keyboard and you say, well, I'm going to live without the Touch Bar. You still might want to have the feature and the security of being able to log on with Touch ID. And that's why Apple may be thinking, and I don't know for sure, but maybe you should put the Touch ID on the machine that stays put, so that people have the freedom to use any keyboard they want, with or without a touchpad. On the other hand, Apple tends to be kind of close-minded about those things and say, well, our keyboard's the best, you should use it, and if you pick your own keyboard, that's your problem. So
yeah, there's no way Apple's going to put the Touch ID on the iMac. Got to reach over and touch that horizontal screen, or vertical.
Apple's not into breaking that plane.
It's built, yeah, but the other consideration is having it directly connected to the electronics and the secure enclave, the way that it is on the MacBook and the MacBook Pro. That could be an overriding technical issue.
Yeah, putting the Touch ID on the iMac, now every time you're going to use it, you're going to change position of your iMac too. No way. Ain't happening. Not going to happen.
What if the keyboard fails for some reason? You can't connect. You can't log on to fix the problem.
You still type in your password?
Well, yeah, every other keyboard can fail too.
Touch ID isn't the only way that you log in to the MacBook Pro. It's just one of the options available to you.
So you can you're confronted with the normal login display, and you can just type on the keyboard you're using
or
password
or right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like an animal.
Like I know. Well, I'm going to be using my MacBook Pro when it shows up like an animal, because I use the Mattias Tactile Pro as my primary keyboard, and the only time I use the built-in keyboard is when I'm not at my desk.
But then you won't be able to use the Touch Bar in lid close mode.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that I'll be able to do close lid mode no problem. So, yes, most of the time, that means that the Touch Bar on my computer will not be a feature that I use.
Interesting. Wonder how many other people will be in that same boat. Interesting.
Yeah. So, anyhow, so we have a feature that looks cool, and I'm looking forward to trying it out. But at this point, I am questioning how much I'm really going to be using that Touch Bar, because I do work in closed lid mode almost all the time.
Yep.
So that means no Touch ID. Yeah. Anyhow. Hey, we have a sponsor today.
Cool.
Yes, that sponsor is Smart Backup 4 from Soul Signal. Their website is soulsignal.com, S-O-L-E, signal.com, excuse me. And I'm pleased that they have been our sponsor all week, because they make a pretty awesome backup solution for your Mac. They've designed a system that will let you do pretty much anything you need with a backup. So you can just have a regular write the files to the disk backup. It can do the incremental backup, so you have multiple versions of files, which means you can go back in time. And actually, in that sense, it's like Time Machine, but better, because it's more reliable. It has a good interface, and it just works. It's also faster. So if you're looking for an alternative to Apple's Time Machine, then this is a really great way to go, because it's going to give you a lot more than Time Machine does in a much better package. You can also create bootable backups, which I think is pretty cool. So you can clone your hard drive to, say, an external drive, make it bootable. If you have a problem where the SSD or hard drive in your Mac conks out on you, no problem. Plug your external drive in and just keep going. I think that's a beautiful thing. And they've designed their system so that it's easy to use, it's easy to understand, it's easy to get set up. And once it's up and running, it's really efficient, because it can write multiple files simultaneously as opposed to one at a time. So it's going to get you what you need faster than other utilities. I think that's just absolutely awesome. They've been doing this for several years, and they've been staying on top of modern technology instead of shackling themselves to the past. And they've come up with a really great system. So here's the deal. If you want to try it out, go to their website, solesignal.com/smartbackup. So that's S-O-L-E signal.com/smartbackup. There's a trial version there. You can download it and make sure it works the way you need. And I'm betting it will, because it's a pretty cool application. Then when you're ready to buy it, make sure you buy it by this Sunday, because I have a special link that you can use, and I could tell you, I could actually say the whole link for you, but that would take the mystery out of a relationship. So instead, what you need to do is go to today's show notes, or actually the show notes for any day this week. There's a special link waiting for you there. And when you click that, it's going to take you to a special page where you get $10 off. The app is regularly $34.99, so you can pick it up through Sunday for $24.99. That's a sweet deal. Totally go do this. And thank you to Smart Backup 4 for being our sponsor today and all week. All right. One other thing that I wanted to talk about before we wrap up today. We ran a Twitter poll asking people who had been holding out to see what Apple announced at the Hello Again media event, what computer they bought afterwards. So we were looking to see what people wanted to buy a new Mac, and then once the announcements were made, what did they actually order?
Yeah, the question was, if you were waiting until after Apple's announcement to buy a new Mac laptop, which did you buy?
And it was almost a perfect split between people that said that they bought the new computer and people that said they bought the computer that was already on the market.
Yeah,
I have a theory about those people buying the new MacBook Pro. I'm betting that a third of those people were in desperate straits and needed a new computer, no matter what its features, no matter whether it had USB-C or not, no matter whether they had to use any dongles. And maybe the other two-thirds were excited about having to buy all these different connectors to get their peripherals working, and we're just excited about the touch bar.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was excited about buying connectors, but go ahead.
Yeah, so I just don't think all of that 55% who were buying a new MacBook Pro were doing it with glee and enthusiasm. Some people were going, oh, I need a new computer, and this is the latest and greatest, so I better get it.
Yeah, probably. That's probably always the case. And there was certainly a lot of pent-up demand, because it's been so freaking long since Apple has actually updated these things. And that that played into a lot of what was going on. But I think that the really interesting thing here is that the 45% of respondents, and of course, I mean, this is a Twitter poll and B, an online Twitter poll, and C.
So clearly a highly scientific study.
Right, right. You know, and, you know, there's no science behind this at all. But I find it fascinating that 45% of our respondents said that their response to the new MacBook Pro announcement was to buy an older device.
Something else. Yeah.
Yeah. The
I found that MacBook, very interesting.
The unupdated MacBook Air or the previous generation of MacBook Pro.
Well, I saw that in the reader comments to my article. So many readers said, I was disillusioned. I watched the event. I'm not excited. I'm going to hang on to my old computer. I've got a 2012, 13, whatever MacBook Pro. I'm going to sit and wait and see how things pan out. More than just a few readers told me that.
Gooey Duck, one of our longest term, am I saying that right, readers, said that he his response was to buy an iMac.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But also not surprising, because if you're looking at a Mac to purchase, the best value for your dollar really is an iMac, because it's like buying a really nice display that gets a computer thrown in for free. And when you buy a MacBook Pro, well, you pay for all these custom design components.
And if you buy a 2015 iMac, 27-inch, you get Thunderbolt 3, you get Skylake, you get a nice, big, beautiful display. So it's pretty current, pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yep, Brian, I think you nailed it, that the real interesting thing out of that survey was that so many people, after seeing the new computer, chose to buy the old one instead.
Yeah. Or even the non-pro models.
Yes. Yeah. That was really interesting. All right. Mm. Well, we are kind of out of time, so we need to wrap up. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us, man. And can't wait to be interviewed by you next week.
Yes. Thank you for that wonderful segue into what I was just about to say. So next week, I'm doing a special series of interviews again. This time, I'm talking with authors. And I have a really cool mix of authors to talk with. I'm going to have Brian on, which is really cool, because I've been loving the whole process that Brian's been going through as he's been writing a novel. And I'll give people another little teaser. The week starts off with an author that has a special place in my heart, and you'll have to listen on Monday to see why. And that author is Ted Landau. I'm really looking forward to people hearing these interviews. So, and Brian, I loved our interview. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Okay. So listen in next week for those interviews, because they were a lot of fun for me, and I hope they're fun for you guys too. John, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome. My distinct pleasure.
It's always awesome to have both of you on the show, even when Brian is cranky.
And John is stoned.
And hey, John is stoned.
No John and Brian warfare. It was great. We were
It almost threw me for a loop.
On the same page here on the way through.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, go check out Smart Backup 4 from Sol Signal. That's SOLE, signal.com/smartbackup. And when you're ready to grab that special deal, $10 off, be sure and do that before Sunday. The link is in today's show notes and the show notes for all week long. Listeners, thank you for being here all week again. You guys really rock. We'll see everyone again on Monday.